I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm speaking with Åsa Danielsson. She's a friend and tour guide from Stockholm in Sweden. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. And Richard's calling in from Lake Sherwood in California. Richard, thanks for your call.
Good to get through to you. Big fan of yours for many years.
Thanks.
My wife and I plan to visit Stockholm, and we'd like to get your guest's opinion on the best things to do and see on a three-day visit in Stockholm, as well as the best time of the year to visit.
That's a good question. Three days in Stockholm, and what time of year would be best?
Okay. Starting with the time of year, what we actually do say is that you don't know Sweden until you've seen Sweden every one of the four seasons, because it really changes a lot. Our whole social life, the way we are, everything changes. So I would say that each time of year, you will see a different face. Obviously, summer is beautiful. That's our favorite time of year. So I think for a beginner, that would be my suggestion. Summer, which would be, you know, starting in May, June, July, and August. And for a three-day visit, I would definitely do the main things, the main sites, which would be the Vasa that we have discussed already. The Skansen Outdoor Museum, Folk Museum, and the City Hall. The City Hall is beautiful.
We haven't talked about the City Hall yet.
No,
this is a striking building.
This is probably the most famous building in Stockholm, because this is where the Nobel Prize banquet is held every year, the 10th of December. And it's a beautiful building which kind of encompasses Swedish culture and art in a very unique way. So it's a very, very beautiful way to
There's a lot of pride. There's a lot of Swedish pride in the City Hall.
Yes.
In Stockholm. Just like there's a lot of Norwegian pride in the City Hall in Oslo.
Exactly. So it's a good way to get an introduction to
And you
what
can
Sweden
climb
about.
The tower there for an incredible view of the town.
Oh, yeah, amazing view. Yeah. Amazing reward once you get to the top.
So I would say, Richard, if you got 3 days, maybe one day in the archipelago and 2 days for all the great sites in Stockholm. I mean, Stockholm has so many just blockbuster sites. You could spend a whole day in that hunting garden, the Djurgården, to see the open-air folk museum, the Nordic museum, and the old warship museum, the Vasa. You could spend a better part of another day at the Royal Palace and the Cathedral and the Arsenal and browsing through the old town with its characteristic cobbled streets and tour the City Hall. The City Hall tour is excellent.
In fact, all
over Scandinavia, the tours that you'll pick up at the sites are wonderful. And this is the land of the midnight sun country, or not quite, but I mean, you got short days in the winter and long days in the summer.
Yeah, never gets dark in the summer.
So in the summer, you got lots going on and generally good weather. Thanks for your call, Richard.
Thanks for the great tips.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Elaine's on the phone in Toronto, Ontario. Elaine, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. Me, my husband, and my then 4-year-old son, just a couple of years ago, we went to Stockholm on a trip, including Copenhagen and Iceland. We rented a home in Danderyd, which is a suburb outside of Stockholm. Mm-hmm. We took the subway every single day into the city center. And every single day, I think, we went to Djurgården. And, we visited Skansen, and we went to the amusement park. And
that's the big island we're talking about with all the great sites. Djurgården is how I would mispronounce it. But
Djurgården.
Djurgården.
Yes, perfect.
Very nice. Elaine, when you were taking the subway in, I was so impressed by the subway system in Stockholm.
It's pretty impressive. It's convenient, and the service was great, and we never ended up renting a car. It was wonderful.
Did you go to any of the markets? I was particularly impressed by some of the Hotorget market.
Mm, yes.
We went to the Salya Hall. Is that considered?
Salya Hall. Yeah, that's nice.
Mm, indoor market. Yeah, this is where we can see all the typical Swedish delicacies are found there. It's a beautiful building as well.
So what would be some of the typical Swedish things you would see in season? It's an explosion of color and beautiful taste.
Well, you have all kinds of game meat, and you have mushrooms, chanterelles, and
the chanterelles I remember are so beautiful. But what kind of game meat would you have?
Reindeer.
You're going to eat reindeer?
Yes, they're delicious.
No.
Yes, it's very good. It's delicious. And then all the berries that you can pick everywhere you can find in these markets. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Now, you were traveling with your family. How was it for traveling with kids?
It's the best thing. I recommend it to everyone, like the free transit for kids under 6.
That's great.
Here in Toronto, it's, after age 2, you have to start paying. So I think it's wonderful when you have family with young kids. like every single day, we'd go over to that island and just pick a different thing to do for the day. So, yeah, we were there every single day, and we just took the subway back, and it was where we had the most fun.
Hey, Elaine, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Linda emails us from Columbia, Maryland, and she writes, I know that Sweden remained neutral and accepted thousands of Jewish refugees in World War II. What sites would you recommend for a visitor who wants to know more about the World War II and Holocaust experience in Stockholm? Also, what about this Swedish neutrality? It's interesting because you have a Nazi resistance museum in Oslo and you have a Nazi resistance museum in Copenhagen.
Yes.
But in Sweden, of course, you guys stayed neutral, so you got off a little easier.
Yeah.
Did you give refuge to Jewish people during Hitler time?
Yes, a lot of Jewish people and a lot of people escaping from Norway and from Denmark. So many people from the resistance movement were in Sweden.
Found refuge in Sweden.
Exactly.
They probably needed a refuge.
Yes, definitely.
What would a traveler look for in Stockholm to learn more about that?
Well, first of all, we have in the center of Stockholm, there's a beautiful synagogue. They have a memorial to the victims of the Holocaust.
Okay.
And also a memorial to Raoul Wallenberg, who is a world-famous diplomat who was a diplomat in Hungary. He managed to save the lives of thousands and thousands of Jews.
And he was Swedish.
He was Swedish. He was there literally giving out fake Swedish passports and literally saving people from the trains to the concentration camps. And he disappeared after the Second World War. So there's a monument in his honor.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Stockholm with Åsa Danielsson. Åsa is a guide from Stockholm. Åsa, I understand you designed an ABBA tour, but I'm also frustrated because they were going to make an ABBA museum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at one time, I think that was the biggest industry in Sweden. Then the museum was canceled. Tell us about the museum and tell us about what an ABBA tour would do in Stockholm.
Well, surprise, surprise, it's open this year.
It is, the ABBA Museum.
The ABBA Museum is opening now, finally, finally. The exhibition has been going on tour all over the world, and now finally they are building a purpose-built museum for it.
Okay, so we can put that in our list of sites next time we go to Stockholm.
Definitely, definitely.
Nancy's on the line from Pacific Grove, California. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Do you have a comment or a question about Stockholm?
Yeah, there's a couple I had. One was, does the Viking ship, is that still a hostel in the bay of Stockholm?
Oh, yeah, that's not a Viking ship, it's a clipper ship.
Yes.
The Af Chapman.
Af Chapman, yes.
The clipper.
A clipper ship, yeah. I wouldn't want to sleep on a Viking ship, but I would sleep on a clipper ship. And it's it's permanently moored right there in the harbor, and it's one of the most memorable youth hostels, I would say, in all of Europe.
Yes, it's a legendary place. And it's actually not just a youth hostel. It's a hostel, and it's very popular among Swedes from the rest of the country that want to come into the capital, and they would prefer to stay there. So it's actually for all ages.
Is it hard to get in, reservation?
Yeah, you usually have to be in advance, especially if you want to sleep on the boat, because there's another hostel right next to it, it's the same hostel, but if you want to sleep on the boat, you should be sure to book in advance.
But you could the hostel on the island just across the dock from it is probably more comfortable, and you can have you can go to the cafe on the deck of the Af Chapman.
Yes,
but if you want to sleep on the boat, you can do it. You just got to. It's understandably popular, so you'd want to make
it. There is a cafe on it you can go
to. And a restaurant.
What's
the name
of it? The name of it again?
Af Chapman.
Afchapman. It's a beautiful ship. It decorates the harbor of Stockholm. And as Åsa mentioned, it's a hostel, not a youth hostel, but a hostel. And in Scandinavia, they took the word youth out of the system. And people of any age can hostel. And
definitely.
Yeah, age only matters if you're a cheese. That's what they say.
Right.
Thanks for your
call.
And
my other question was, what restaurant is one of the best in Old Town?
In the Old Town.
Mm. Well, there are plenty of restaurants in the Old Town, but one is really special. It's one of the oldest restaurants in the world. It's from 1722.
Really? What's the name of that one?
Gyllene Freden, the Golden Peace.
The Golden Peace.
Yes.
Golden
like peace, like peace in war?
Exactly.
The Golden Peace.
So that would be Freden.
In the Old Town.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great restaurants in the Old Town. You can walk around and just see what appeals.
You should choose one that has a basement, like this medieval basement. You go down to the vaults, and that really gives a special atmosphere. So.
Ooh, that sounds really exciting.
Yes.
Do they serve reindeer there?
They do. They must.
Yeah.
Yes.
They must. That's good. Thanks for your call, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye. Nancy.
Also, we mentioned the ABBA Museum,
yes.
And you also have put together a walk. What would you see on the walk that relates to the greatest musical group that came out of Sweden?
We actually go through the center of Stockholm, and we see the many of the main sites, but we do it with an ABBA perspective. We're going to see the places where they performed, where they lived, and all sorts of things that has to do with ABBA, and we do it to the tunes of ABBA. So we actually listen to the music while we're walking. So it's like a caravan of people singing and dancing, and people are looking at us and wondering what is going on. But it's just an ABBA tour.
It sounds like a celebration of both Swedish life and great music.
Yes, it is.
Åsa Danielsson, thank you so much for giving us a little peek into your beautiful city, the capital of Sweden, Stockholm.
Thank you very much.
When you visit the Nordic countries, there's one local tradition you just have to experience any time of year. Our favorite guide to opera and Italian cuisine, Fred Plotkin, joins us right now to share the pleasure of a proper sauna, the way he learned to experience it in Finland. When I was in Finland, my guide took me to the rooftop of a restaurant with a nice balcony overlooking the town, and below me on the roof just across the way, there was the top floor of a business, and it was filled with well-fed businessmen cooked like red lobsters in their sauna. And she said, every business provides a sauna. I realized later that at the National Finnish Opera House, there's two saunas that are kept fired up all the time for musicians and patrons of the arts to enjoy a little soak. I'm joined by Fred Plotkin for an insight into the sauna of Finland. Fred, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
When I was talking about that little introduction to the sauna, what was your response? Is it Finnish? Is it Swedish? Why is it such a big deal?
Well, it was born in Finland, and sauna to them is sacred, and I mean that very seriously. In ancient times, childbirth took place in the sauna because it was warm and it was hygienic. When people died, they were dressed for burial in the sauna. There is an expression in Finland, first build the sauna, then build the house, because the sauna is what is life-giving. People can often keep food in there. It is the place where everything is maintained through the cold winters, and it's the place where you clean yourself, and then after that you go for a dunk in the Baltic, in a swimming pool, in the shower, and assuming you don't have a heart condition, that is the best thing to do. Anyone who goes to Helsinki should get a Helsinki card, which provides transport, but also admission to the Finnish Sauna Society, where you can learn about the different types of sauna, 5 degrees of humidity, the cold soaks, the hot soaks, and then the pièce de résistance, you can be scrubbed. You have not lived until you've had a kindly old Finnish woman scrub you like you're a little baby, and you feel so content after that you go right to sleep. The best sleep of your life.
Now, Fred, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm trying to analyze the economics of the sauna. And my hunch is, in a less affluent time, there were more public saunas. And today, in an affluent age, when the tourist goes to Finland, the saunas that he or she will be able to enjoy are either in the hotel or on the cruise ship coming in. But most people are wealthy enough to have a sauna in their home. Consequently, there's not so many corner saunas anymore, but if you go to a poorer or a working class neighborhood in the suburbs away from the center, that's where you might find a traditional public sauna.
There are a few left. My favorite is Ironkatu, right in the middle of Helsinki from 1928. But there's another one called Kotiharju, which is a wood-fired sauna, the last one that's public in Helsinki. And this is where working class people go. Because once upon a time, they did not necessarily have showers in their homes, so they went to clean themselves at the public sauna. There's no whiff of sexuality the way there is in lots of other countries with sauna. To the Finns, it's purely something about hygiene, about pleasure, about relaxation.
Now, I took the bus out to Kotiharju one afternoon, and it was quite a powerful, interesting experience for me. There wasn't any English there. It was definitely a working-class, functioning sauna filled with people who were there to do their soak and their relaxation. And I went in, and I remember being kind of awkward. I felt sort of like a naked Woody Allen without his glasses. And I was sitting on this concrete step surrounded by steam and knotty wood paneling and rusty railings and naked Finns. And everybody had long, stringy blonde hair pasted to their face. And I remember looking out and thinking, wow, I have no idea what century I'm in, but it's definitely Finland. It was a fascinating, wonderful experience.
It's genuine. And in a time when so many things are created as prepackaged experiences, when you find something genuine, you do everything you can not only to be a part of it, but do everything you can to save it. These are landmarks that are part of our culture, not just Finnish culture, but world culture.
And then afterward, I decided, in the spirit of Fred Plotkin, to embrace the sensuousness of it all, to get that rub down you talked about. And this woman who was wearing like a fisherman's plastic bib, she put me on her table. I felt like a salmon being gutted. She knew how to hold my slippery arm with all the suds and so on, so she could pull me up and scrub me. Dirt was coming off me in Tootsie Rolls with her Brillo pad mitts. And she worked me over, and I can't explain how relaxed and clean I felt after that. That's the scrub down you're talking about?
Yes, but also as Americans, we're taught to be in control of our situations. Everything we learn in school is about control. And this is about giving up all control and just being completely treated as an object of love and affection, and not having any means of giving it back. You just give in, and you feel blissful. There's no other way to say it.
You know, that's a very interesting concept, giving up control. There I was. I mean, naked. Everybody was naked there. I'm laying on this big wooden picnic table, and this woman, who's just very strong and knows what she's doing, just works me over. And I just said, all right, here I go. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. When in Finland, let's go to the sauna.
The Romans wouldn't do that, I assure you.
Well, when you go to Finland, you've got an experience waiting for you. We would recommend that particular sauna, I think. Kotiharju.
Kotiharju. But also the Finnish Sauna Society, which is just outside of town and reachable on public transport, is another one that maintains that tradition.
I guess if you're going to do a sauna in Finland or Sweden, you would go Finland?
Yes.
All right. Fred Plotkin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick. Thanks for web help to Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Special thanks to the Radio Foundation in Manhattan for production help today. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can listen again to this week's show, search our radio archives by air date or by topics, and find out when different radio stations web stream Travel with Rick Steves. It's all in the radio section of ricksteves.com. Join us again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.